You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Morning, Tri-State. This is Lisa at Radio Rehab again for another exciting session with a friend of mine that I have known for 7+ years that's come to Radio Rehab to share some of his experience, strength, and hope. We're here every week with people that are sharing their story of substance abuse and addiction, but more importantly, recovery, sobriety, how to get well. We talk to moms, dads, kids, brothers, sisters, ministers, priests, rabbis, plumbers, you name it. From Park Avenue to Park Bench, we've all been affected by substance abuse. It's the root of a lot of our problems in our society. But every week we bring people in to share that there's hope, people get better, and you just got to sometimes know where to go. And hopefully Radio Rehab will provide that opportunity for some of our folks in the tri-state, give you hope and some direction on where you can go and that people can change and get better. Well, like I said earlier, today I have Carl here, who I've known for 7.5 years. And ever since I've known Carl, I've looked up to him and admired him for his ambition and commitment to recovery. So I'm glad to have you here. Hi, Carl. How you doing?
Hi, Lisa. Thanks. I'm doing pretty good today. Thanks.
Well, you know, you always have that look of sobriety in your eyes. And
well, I tell you, it's in me today. It's in me like it's never been before. I've tried it to stay clean and sober 2 or 3 different other times, and I think this time is really installed in me. So
yeah, and it shows. Yeah. Bill Wilson, the founder of AA, says it's the language of the heart.
Right.
And it shows in your eyes and in your heart.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm glad you're here to share with us a little about your story and how things changed for you. I talked to you a little bit ahead of the show and learned you're from St. Louis, but came to Evansville, and God, that's when the trouble started.
Oh,
coming
God.
To Evansville, Indiana. So you were in just 8th grade and started tasting beer. So
tell us
a little about your story.
Well, like I said before, I started drinking a little bit in the 8th grade. I remember a friend and I, we used to skip school, so to speak, a couple of days, and
So you were rebellious from the start, huh?
Well, not really, not really rebellious. I remember doing that 1 or 2 times, but I didn't do it all the time. But I remember when I first started drinking, that's what I'd done.
You liked it? Right from the start?
I really did. Like I said, it gave me courage. It made me brave. I was brave, and, mm-hmm. and I got to do some things that I didn't do when I was sober, I guess. So, yeah, I liked it from the start.
Did you grow up in a family where you saw heavy drinking? Was it normalized in your environment?
Well, my mom and dad, they both drank beer, and they partied a little bit, and as a kid, you know, it happened so often, you know, it was a way of life. It was normal then for us to come home from school or to go to bed at night, and you know, friends are over and they're drinking and music going, but you know, for the most part, I had pretty good parents coming
mm-hmm.
up. Yeah,
that taught you right from wrong. Anyway.
Yeah, they taught me right from wrong. Yeah, I knew exactly what I was getting to in my adult life when I started partying.
Yeah, I mean, it's not unusual for young families to recreationally drink. And
right.
A lot of kids, I think, grow up seeing it in their parents and in the environment.
Back in the 70s and 80s, it was pretty normal, you know, to do that. But nowadays, that, you know, whenever you do that, it's trouble. And you know, there's harder drugs out there today
mm-hmm.
than it was back then. So it was normal for us to see that.
So was booze pretty much your thing through your young life?
Absolutely. I love to drink beer.
Yeah.
And I could drink beer all day. And there's times where I drink myself to sleep.
No kidding.
And I wake up drinking. And like I said,
so the phenomenon of craving began very early for you, it sounds like.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was a good athlete in school, and I had a downfall, and that's when I really picked up
more drinking.
Yeah.
Because it looked like the athletics was not going to turn out.
Or? Yeah, I was a boxer.
And, oh, you were.
Yeah, I was a boxer, and things didn't pan out for me the way that I planned for them to. And I started drinking more, and it just took off from there, Lisa.
Do you think, Carl, that your boxing was affected by your drinking? Instead of your drinking affected because of the... Do you think drinking affected the way you boxed and focused and concentrated on your sport?
Not really, because when it's time to box, then that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I love to do that. And in training, I never boxed while I was training for a fight. I never drank while I was training for a fight or anything. So
you were pretty focused on...
I was pretty much more of a weekend drinker then.
Yeah. So at that point... Was it obvious to you your drinking was excessive, or was it just something most young guys do?
Well, it was getting to be that way. But like I said, at first it was more of a weekend thing, and then it kind of gradually went into pretty much every day.
Mm-hmm. So, even in high school?
Even in high school, I started drinking more. And, and it kind of progressed until mm-hmm. my adult years. I didn't really start getting in trouble with it until my young adult years, 25, 26.
DUI, you said?
Yeah, I got a DUI December the 2nd. And then I turned around and got another one December the 20th.
Of the same year?
Same month, same year. And I knew then that I was headed for trouble if I didn't change my ways.
So... Did anybody intervene after those DUIs and tell you they thought you might have a drinking problem?
Sure. I had a couple of court appointments, and they kind of set me straight on what I need to do to stay out of jail. So I went to a treatment center.
Oh, you did?
Stepping Stone Treatment.
Yeah.
First time I was court ordered there, so I didn't really go on my own. So it was something that I did to get the courts off my back to, just to stay out of trouble.
Did it help?
It helped until I was done with the program. Now, when I completed the program and I was off of probation and done with the courts, then I was free to do what I, wanted to do. And what I wanted to do at that time was drink and party.
Mm-hmm. So you saw sobriety as more a sentence imposed on you by the courts than
Absolutely.
A lifestyle you wanted for yourself.
Absolutely. I was single. I didn't have mm-hmm. any kids. I didn't have any responsibilities.
A job?
I had a job.
Pretty good job.
I had a job. I always had a job. Mm-hmm. And I was blessed to always have a good job in my life.
So did it affect your work?
No, there was times where, you wake up late and you go into work with the hangover from the night before.
But you went to work.
For the most part, I went to work every day.
So, Carl, that old image of if you're an alcoholic, you don't work is past tense, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Most alcoholics can work today and function fairly well in that area.
There's a lot of functioning alcoholics out there that that really needs treatment.
So do you think for you, as long as you could work, that kept you in denial?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I didn't like hearing that the word alcoholic. That meant to me like a wino on the street, a homeless guy, mm-hmm. some kind of homeless guy out there.
So there's still that image
that doesn't have a place to live. Yeah. Mm. So that was an alcoholic to me. So That wasn't me. That wasn't me because I was functioning.
Right.
Like I said, I worked, had a place to live, had a car to drive, food in the refrigerator, healthy, had friends that, did the same thing I did. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't an alcoholic.
So when you went through treatment and went to the meetings, even though you were court committed, did you identify at that time with any of it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I identified with it at the time. But that just... Let me know at that time who I was and what I was doing and mm-hmm. what I was getting into. So
Gave you some education.
Yeah.
But not motivation.
Planted that seed in me till I really needed it, and I'm glad it did, because today it really shows. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So then you said you got another DUI later and got put on Anabuse, and your dream drink, alcohol, was taken away from you.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't drink anymore when I got on Anabuse, because it's a little pill you take, and you take it, and they sit there 5 minutes while it works in your system, and then you're free to go after that. And
do they watch you take it?
They watch you take it.
Because I've heard of people drinking on Anabuse, and I'm like, not very many. I don't think so. Not if they're taking it.
Well, they're pretty tough if they can do that. So I doubt if there's too many people out there that can do that.
Yeah, no, I don't think
Anabuse
so.
Anabuse is a good thing.
So it was a tool for you. How long did you take Anabuse?
For 3 years. I did that for 3 years.
Oh, my goodness. So not a drop of alcohol.
Not a drop of alcohol for 3 years.
So what happened to you with your need to have a buzz?
Well, I stayed sober for a while.
How?
I just
willpower?
Taking Anabuse.
And willpower?
I tried drinking on that Anabuse. It made me sick as a dog.
Oh, yeah.
I knew then that it wasn't going to happen for me. I wasn't going to feel like that again. So I didn't drink for the length of time that I was on Anabuse. So once I...
What did you do to... Did you just stay completely drug and alcohol free then?
No. Well, actually, I have this addictive personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
if
I'm going to get high on something, if I can't drink, then I'm going to use something else to get high on. And that's what I did. At that time, I turned to cocaine. And then the powder cocaine is what I did. I snorted for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I like the feeling of it. I like the drainage of it. And that's what I did for a little while.
So you're going in, taking your Anabuse, and not drinking.
Right.
And then you're leading this other double life where you're leaving there and going and doing cocaine.
There was time. Well, yeah, I did that. But wow. not all the time now.
That's a hard way to live, isn't it?
Yeah.
Living that lie.
Yeah. Well, that's what our addiction, addiction tells us to do. You know, it tells you, it makes you believe that you can do something else to feed it.
It tells you you're okay.
Yeah. And it's okay for you to do that. That's what it tells you. It tricks you.
So here's this boxing promising young man that's drinking all the time, getting in legal trouble, now on Anabuse in his 20s, starting to do powder cocaine. What goes in your mind when you make that choice?
Well, I tell you, I know at the time that I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And, you know, there's this guilt that comes across you that if you're any kind of person at all, that you feel like guilt when it comes to you, and you just pray. You pray, and that's what I did. I prayed every day. I prayed to God to help me, to deliver me from this feeling.
So right from the start with the cocaine, did you feel that it was over for you, as far as you knew, once you broke that taboo and started with cocaine?
I didn't feel that it was over. I just felt that I was headed down a dead-end road that, you know, if I didn't collect myself, then something was going to really bad happen to me. So I've seen people who, friends of mine, who didn't make it in life because of their addiction.
Cocaine,
so, right,
alcohol.
Cocaine, alcohol, mm-hmm. if it was a drunk driving accident, or if they just did too much cocaine.
Were you driving?
Or was I driving?
At that time, or did you lose your license?
I lost my license for a year.
But when you were doing the cocaine, you were driving?
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you think you were impaired driving on cocaine?
Well, there was times when I was, yeah, absolutely.
That's something that we have all the DUI stops, but they don't stop and check if you're stoned on pot or cranked up.
Not unless you get in an accident or something, mm-hmm. then they check you out. But it's really good that they have a really good system today that, you know, they check you out. They know if you're on pills or drugs or anything when you're driving. So you don't get away as you could back in the 80s.
That's true.
You can't get away now.
No.
So it's better to not do it than to do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the cocaine thing, did that just keep getting worse as well, like
oh,
your
yeah.
drinking? How did that finally stop?
It progressed. Whenever I got off the Antabridge program and I got finished with the probation and everything, and I can drink again, I would drink.
You went back to drinking then?
Oh, absolutely. I wasn't done yet. I was still young. Like I said, I didn't have any responsibilities other than going to work.
And now doing cocaine, too.
And now I'm doing cocaine.
Goodness.
And I'm drinking. And, you know, my life was a total wreck.
Yeah, but going to work.
But I was going to work. I was functioning. I was looking good. I had some money, and I dressed nice.
Yeah,
And I
knew how to look real good.
Oh, yeah, and I had everybody food but me.
Mm.
I had meat inside of me was a wreck, nervous wreck.
That guilt.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's an important ingredient, those of us that work with others, so to speak, need to see if the person has some guilt about their past lifestyle?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's got to be number one.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why in AA we have this, it's called the fourth step.
Yes.
And you that's when you get together with your sponsor and you write down all these things that you was afraid of and things that you're not afraid of, and you write down things that made you do it, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what things
they call it taking an inventory.
Absolutely.
That's
when you do that, you get to get out all these bugs that's been in you for years. That's, you know, that,
and you got to accumulate a lot of those in an addiction.
Oh yeah,
a lot of secrets, a lot of bugs.
Yeah, the first time I did it, I think I had like 20 something pages front
oh
back.
Oh my God!
And, you know, and now when I do it, I don't have that many.
Right.
You know, so
kind of your first dirty laundry list.
Yeah. So when you write those things down and you look at them and you say, "Man, my God, what have I done with myself?"
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you get to see
the truth
it on,
is revealed.
You get to see it on paper, and then that really helps you out a
mm-hmm.
lot on
that's
what,
a turning
where you
point.
Need to go in life. Yeah.
So what finally got you to see the light with the cocaine and alcohol then? You'd been in the antabuse programs, you'd been in DUI courts, what finally did it?
Well, the last straw was I got in trouble for having cocaine on me, I got in trouble for dealing cocaine, and I went to prison for it, okay? And while in prison, I decided to change my life. I took advantage of all the self-help programs in prison. They got AA, they got parenting, they got long-distance dads.
No
they got
kidding.
all these different kinds of programs in prison that you can take for yourself to better you.
You can volunteer to go in these programs?
You volunteer to go into them.
And you did?
And that's what I did while I was in there. And while I was in there, I decided to change my life. This is not how I want to live. I don't
But everybody makes that decision in jail. What was different about your decision?
Well, I felt it. You know, you really have. Mm-hmm. You really got to have it in your heart. You really got to have God in you.
Yeah,
for me,
and you know, Carl.
For me, I had to have God in my heart to.
What I noticed different about you, also was. You didn't try to make a bunch of promises of never again. So many people, never again, I'm done, I'm done,
yeah.
I'm done. You never came out saying, it's over, I'm done. You never said, my willpower, I've conquered this thing. It was like you came out and you kept it very humbly to yourself.
Absolutely.
That you had surrendered.
Yeah, and I think that's the one of the things that I've done so much before. I've always told my grandma that, I'm never going to do it again. I'm sorry. I'm never going
to
do it again.
And that's music to our family's ears.
Yeah.
And the judge's ears. And they want to hear that.
Yeah. You
can't.
You lose the people that love you when you do that. And I had to prove.
Yes.
I had to prove myself.
And you were willing to do that as well.
Oh, yeah.
So you came out, what happened? You were in prison and made a decision. You're going to get involved in all these programs and learn how to live.
I got out. I got out a year and a half early for good behavior.
A year and a half early. You must have been really good.
I had
absolutely
no write-ups. There was alcohol. There was cocaine.
In the prison?
There was cigarette cigarettes, all kinds of stuff that I could use. But I know me with my addiction, that little stuff wasn't going to be enough for me. So I decided not to use it, and that's what I do today. So
even in prison, you were tempted.
Oh, yeah. There's just because you go on the inside and
that's
you're locked down doesn't mean that
it's
you're
not
away
there.
From it. No, it's there, too. So...
So you got out a year and a half early.
I got out a year and a half early,
and then
to participate in the drug court program
with Judge Trockman.
With Judge Trockman, yeah, he was a blessing to me.
Isn't he awesome?
Yes, he's a blessing to me.
The whole drug court movement is just incredible, isn't it?
And Debbie Mulberry,
yes,
she accepted me to be on their program,
yes,
because she didn't know about me at first. You know, I had to prove myself
well,
to her,
too. Well, your record looked like, what's this guy got to offer? You know, he's gotten in trouble time and time again.
That's right. But she really helped me out when I first got out.
So how long were you in the drug court?
I was in the drug court program for 18 months. And then I had 18 months probation after that.
I know it's a lot like our Warwick County's drug court is modeled after Wayne and Debbie's drug court here in Vandenberg. There's just that accountability. Accountability. You think that was important for you?
Yeah, it's like I live my life under a microscope. You know, they watched everything I did.
That's right.
They give me a pager, and if they page me, then I had to drop what I'm doing to call them.
Yeah.
And if they want
no
me to
excuses.
Come in, I have to stop what I'm doing and make it there. I didn't have a car at the time, and I have to find my own way there. So, you know, it's really an intense program to be on. But it's very good because they give you hope.
Mm-hmm.
They give you guidance.
And did you go to treatment?
Oh, yeah, I went to treatment.
Do you think that was important for you?
Absolutely.
To have rehab?
Yeah, absolutely. Treatment is always good.
Yeah.
Always good because... I see myself like a wheelbarrow, okay? I could do my work. I can do the work, but I just need somebody to push me.
Oh, that's
at times,
neat,
you know?
Analogy.
So when Judge Trockman and Debbie Mulberry says, well, I want you to be in court every Tuesday, Debbie Mulberry says, I want you to be there and I want you to wear a nice shirt and dress nice when you go to court, then that's what you got to do.
Yeah,
you know. So they teach you the way of life, though, how to live.
So what do you do when you get involved in a program like that, or in rehab, or in your 12-step meetings, and you see people or hear people that you just know are using the system?
Well, for me, I just worry about myself.
Yeah, you have to, huh?
Those people who are negative, I try to stay away from them. And I do not associate with people today who are still using or are still partying or because they have a way of trying to drag you down with them. So I stay away from people like that today.
Is that easy for you to do?
Absolutely. I shut the door in a minute and drive off.
What about, because I always hear, well, you know, it's in my family or I can't avoid it.
I stay away from family members.
If you have to do it, you just have to stay away, don't you?
They're not going to be drunk all the time. So the times that they're not drunk and you see them, that's fine. But when they are, then that's when you don't go around them. No, I don't.
So is your recovery number one in your mind
absolutely.
At all times?
Absolutely.
So
at all times.
What do you do today? I mean, what's a day look like for you today for a recovering man?
When my alarm clock goes off at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I finally shut it off for the third time, I say the serenity prayer in the bed before I get out of bed.
Yeah,
I say the serenity prayer. And then before I leave for work, after I fix my lunch and everything, drink my coffee, before I leave for work, I always read Psalms 91 and 100.
Is that your morning meditation?
Absolutely.
Time? Yeah.
Absolutely. That's like putting on, when I read those two Bible scriptures, that's like for me putting the armor of God on before I go out into the world.
Wow.
And
have that discipline.
Every day. I never leave the house without doing that. If I'm running late from work, which I hardly ever do, what's 5-10 more minutes?
Right.
You know, and you will be amazed if you are running late, and you stop and you take 5 or 10 minutes to read those scriptures or give God his time, mm-hmm. what the results will be when you get to where you're going. So it's not going to, you're not going to really be that much late, and you're not going to be in trouble. So
so you start your day with that daily meditation and prayer, and then you go to work.
Absolutely. And then I'll hit a meeting. My home group is KISS group. It's right there at the Impact, right there on the corner of Belmeath and 8th.
And is that an open meeting?
That's an open discussion meeting every Thursday night.
Every Thursday night, 7 o'clock?
At 7 o'clock, yeah. And we're hosting a 16th year anniversary this year.
Of KISS?
Of KISS group. Yeah, it's going to be Sunday, December the 16th at the Arcs building. They're in downtown Evansville.
What
by Haney's Corner, Art Gallery. You know where that is?
Yeah.
It's on the corner of Blackford and 2nd.
What time?
At 6 o'clock. Doors open at 6. We're going to have a speaker meeting. Speaker starts at 7. Dinner starts at 8, and then we're going to have a dance from 8 to 10.
All right.
So it's going to be one heck of a deal we got going on here. We really went all out.
Is that part of what your recovery is like today, having fun, celebrating?
I used to never thought I can do anything sober. I always thought that for me to have any fun, I had to have a few beers first before I can go out and do anything. But today, you don't have to have alcohol or drugs to get that courage to be mm-hmm. strong or to fit in.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to have that drink. You just go out and you just do it.
Be yourself.
Yeah, you just do it, and you have all kinds of fun. And not to mention the money you have.
That's a reward right off the bat.
Not to mention the money that you will have, you know, from not partying so much. So, yeah.
Well, Carl, your life is definitely transformed.
Well, thank you. It's all because of this program.
Yeah, and it shows. What do you think, in closing, we can say to people in the community, parents that have young kids that think they have to have a drink to have fun?
I think that a parent ought to recognize their wrongs.
Yeah.
Whenever they are wrong, whenever they drink, and they come and they're around their families, and their lives are all messed up because of it, then that parent ought to get some help
and be a good role model for one thing.
Absolutely, because they don't want their kids growing up to be like us.
No,
you know, for me, if it was me, if I had to do it, I would make sure my kids know that I'm in treatment. And that I had a problem with drinking and drugging, and I'm going to get some help about it.
And you are, and you're helping others.
Yeah.
You're incredible, and I hope you come back and visit us on Radio Rehab. Such hope to pass on.
Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Now, 7.5 years, one day at a time, without a drink, a drug, a pill, anything.
And not to mention cigarettes.
And having a good time. And no cigarettes.
And no cigarettes.
And having a good time.
That's right.
So if anybody wants to go to the Thursday night meeting at
the KISS group, it's at
the KISS group.
Impact.
And ask for Carl.
Ask for Carl, and I'll be sitting there with a smile. Always got a cup of coffee in my hand.
Yep. And a lot of laughter and a lot of hope. Thanks so much for coming on.
Well, thank you.
And Tri-State, we'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening. If you have any questions, nothing's below the belt at Radio Rehab. Call, write. Carl will answer your questions. I'll answer your questions. You can access us on lisaseifcares.net. Go into podcast and you'll hear Carl on the World Wide Web, and you can call or write the radio station here at the pump, and we'll be sure and answer your questions. Until we get to see you and share again with you next week, Tri-State, don't forget to do the next right thing.